The following podcast contains advertising. To access an ad-free version of the Lawfare podcast, become a material supporter of Lawfare at patreon.com/lawfare. That's patreon.com/lawfare. Also, check out Lawfare's other podcast offerings, Rational Security, Chatter, Lawfare No Bull, and The Aftermath.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I must say that both sides received it enthusiastically. I mean, they loved it, especially the Israeli side. About the Palestinian side, it's not that too many people saw it. You have it in Netflix, but you don't have Netflix in the West Bank. The ones that really understood and had the chance to see it loved it. Even the Hamas officials. And I know the Hamas officials, some of them saw it. I know. Not, I assume, but I know.
I'm Benjamin Wittes, and this is the Lawfare Podcast, June 24th, 2017. The Israeli television show Fauda, now on Netflix in the United States, portrays a team of undercover Israeli counterterrorism operatives in the West Bank and the Hamas terror cell they are chasing. It's an unsentimental but remarkably human and intimate look at both sides of a conflict in which operatives miss their families and have moments of uncertainty and moral anxiety mid-mission. In Israel this week, I sat down to discuss the show first with Avi Issacharoff, co-creator of Fauda, who is also an analyst on Palestinian affairs for the Times of Israel and the Hebrew language website Walla. I also talked to General Dov Fufi Sadaka, a former Israeli Special Forces commando who later ran the civil administration of the occupied territories. We talked about the show, what it portrays, where it captures reality, and where it takes liberties. It's the Lawfare Podcast, episode 235, two interviews on Fauda. This first interview is with Avi Issacharoff, journalist and co-creator of Fauda. We talked in Tel Aviv on Tuesday of this week. So I wanted to chat with you about Fauda, which I recently watched, and I was fascinated by, and particularly fascinated to see your involvement in creating it. And so I wanted to, first of all, talk to you about what your role was in the project and what does it mean to be the creator of this show?
I would say that this is more or less the equivalent of a showrunner in the States. Although it's even more than a showrunner in the States, because you invent the idea, you invent the plot, and you write part of the dialogues and the episodes. So this is creator, more or less, for me. And I'm sure that creator would be different in any other TV show, but in our show, in Lioraz and mine, it was that we were deeply, deeply involved in everything, starting with the locations, the actors, doing the auditioning, choosing of the music, writing the script, inventing the whole plot, so everything.
I'm interested in how this interacts with your day job as a journalist covering Palestinian politics. Talk about the relationship between the show and what you do in real life.
So I think that, you know, at the end of the day, it helps me. I mean, my day job helps me with that, because I'm still doing articles and reports as a newspaper, for the newspaper, not for the newspaper, but for the website. And I'm still creating the second season of Fauda. So I'm doing both. It takes more time for me, you know, we're just at the eve of filming the second season, of starting the shooting of the second season. So it takes a lot of time for me, but usually when we're not shooting or filming, so I'm a bit more relaxed. Like twice a week we meet, we talk about Fauda, and the rest of the time, I'm a journalist.
To a US viewer, the characters that you're describing in Fauda on the Israeli side are quite mysterious, because in the United States, the counterterrorism forces that would do the activities that you're portraying domestically would be FBI, overseas,
CIA,
or maybe military. In Fauda, they are not military, but they work for the Ministry of Defense.
Yeah.
Who are they, and do such forces really exist?
It's funny because, you know, for the Israeli audience, I don't think that it really bothered them who they were. Why? Because we have undercover units. We all know that we have undercover units. So we don't need the definitions. And I think that for the American audience, it's different, because I hear these kinds of questions not for the first time. And I think that it's more important for the U.S. Audience to understand, are they defined as CIA?
Are they defined as Shabak? Are they DOD?
We intentionally didn't define them. So no one would say these are army guys, these are CIA guys. No. These are undercover. If they are called Shin Bet or Mossad or army, I don't care.
Uh-huh.
This is what undercover people do. And this is what we cared for.
So your portrayal of them is fascinating across a lot of axes. One, the depth at which they can blend in with Palestinian society, but also the brutality and sort of no holds barred manner in which they do this particular function. And I'm curious for your sense as a journalist and also as a writer of this show, how realistic is this? Is this what we should understand Israeli counterterrorism undercover operations in the West Bank to look like? Or is there a level at which both on the capability side and on the brutality side, that this is, hyperbolic for cinematic effect?
Look, this is not 100% realistic, but it's based upon reality, if you understand the difference.
Sure.
So, you know, I'm sure that there's some level of brutality, of aggressiveness. I'm sure that they are asked and needed to be sometimes aggressive in order to get to the bad guys. But we took it one step further, of course. So they kidnap people on their own decisions. This is something that
doesn't
happen.
They tie suicide belts to children.
That doesn't exist. That doesn't happen. But this is good drama. And I'm sorry if I'm going to disappoint here someone that expected this is reality. No, it's not. It's not that she will find Israeli special forces kidnapping people just for because they decided to do it. This is not the case. About their ability to mingle into the local population or assimilate into the local population, I'm sure that there are some units that are capable of doing that.
You also have a remarkable portrait of Hamas operations. And you are, in your journalistic capacity, in touch with the sort of people who you portray.
Yeah.
So talk to us about where this portrayal of both the political operational leadership of Hamas, but also where the portrayal of operations come from. How much of that is from conversations that you've had, things that you know, and how much of that is just kind of imagined? I mean, you spend a lot of time on the phone with those people, with talking to people.
And not on the phone. No, I think that it's based upon knowledge in this case. Knowledge, understanding, knowing the people, research that I did, investigations, etc., etc. The character, the main character on the Palestinian side, is based upon a true character, on the character of Sheikh Ibrahim Hamed, who was the most wanted terrorist in the West Bank for 6 years, 2000-2006, and they couldn't get to him. And he disappeared time after time after time. But they knew that his biggest weakness was his wife, that he's really obsessed with his wife, and
wants to talk with her, to her, to buy her presents, to write her letters. And they try to get to him through the wife. And I think that this is what we try to do. This is what we try to show. About, you know, I would say that except for the planting of a bomb inside someone's... So this is not something that happened here, but it happened in Saudi Arabia with Al-Qaeda. 2007, 2008, Al-Qaeda sent someone with a bomb inside his stomach in order to blow and to kill one of the prince crowns.
Nice.
Yeah, Mohammed bin Naif.
So on both the Israeli and the Palestinian side, what was the reaction to this? This is in many ways an incredibly unflattering portrayal of both, although a very human portrayal of both. How was it received?
I must say that both sides received it enthusiastically. I mean, they loved it, especially the Israeli side. About the Palestinian side, it's not that too many people saw it. You have it in Netflix, but you don't have Netflix in the West Bank. The ones that watched it loved it. The ones that really understood and had the chance to see it, loved it. Even the Hamas officials. And I know that Hamas officials, some of them saw it. I know. Not, I assume, but I know. The Israeli side went crazy. I mean, that was the most popular show of 2015. Although it's not showing the Israeli special forces in a kind of very positive way, and although it shows the terrorists sometimes in a kind of a very positive way, but they loved it. It's very honest.
And what was the... was there a political valence to the enthusiasm for it? I mean, was it...
Nothing like that.
It was people across the political spectrum.
Yeah, both sides.
The second interview is with General Fufi Sadaka, who in many ways resembles some of the characters on the show. He was a prized special operator, for example, in part because, like the characters in Fauda, his Arabic is good enough to pass for native. He also spent years running the Israeli occupation government, despite hating the occupation and believing it should end. We spoke in Jerusalem on Thursday.
Describe the parts of your career, both in the military and in the civil administration, that are related to this show.
Okay. It's a good question because I served... First, I started my career in Special Forces, Sayeret Matkal. And then after I became a lieutenant colonel in these special forces, I was promoted and later on became the head of the civil administration, first in Gaza and then in the West Bank. So I can look at this series and look at any kind of what's happening on the ground, I can look from two angles. One as a fighter, was special forces, so I can look at it from two angles, one of the special forces and then as the head of the civil administration. And I must say that it's totally different point of view.
Okay, so let's talk about it from both points of view. First of all, from the point of view of special forces, it's not clear when you watch the show who these people are. It's not clear whether are they military, are they Shin Bet. And when I asked Avi about this, he said we left it ambiguous on purpose. So when you look at watch the series, who did the characters in this, the unit in this, did they remind you of Sayeret Matkal? Did they seem like something else, or did they seem unrealistic to you?
No, it seems very realistic. I agree with Avi that they didn't mention a specific unit or specific, if they are from the army, they are from other units, or they're undercover of the Shabak or something. To me, it's immediately... raise up that it's belong to some kind of special forces, belong to more to the security service than to the army. They are operating in the age are much higher than a regular soldiers. What they are doing is different from other units. To me, it seems more close to Shin Bet, the security service of Israel.
So when we've talked in the past, you've described that one of your qualifications in that unit was that you had near native Arabic.
Yes.
And one of the really interesting features of the portrayal of the unit is the way they blend in with the population in the Palestinian territories, and the degree to which they can pass as residents
of their or as local.
As local,
yeah. And totally local, yeah.
So talk to me about the role that kind of undercover work plays in Israeli counterterrorism and specifically in special forces. So when U.S. special forces go out, you know, nobody thinks they're Afghans, right? Nobody thinks they're Iraqis.
Okay. No, here in Israel we are for many years. No, it's not from now. It's not many, many years, but of course after we occupied the territories and before, we divided our ability to be part of the region. So in this case, it's the Palestinian area. The other case, which I cannot elaborate more, but related to other area in the region. So we became very, very professional, and we did a very good work during the years, improving our ability and capability to become part of the societies that we are reacting of. The other side of the special forces, yes, you are right. There is the special forces, my unit who did Entebbe, who did other operation, but one of the our experience is to do such work undercover in the territories. So yes, we developed a very good and very intelligent and very intelligent and sophisticated way to hide inside the society.
So when you watch this show, to what extent did you look at it and say, this is a realistic portrayal in your judgment of what Israeli special forces operations in the territories are like? And to what extent did you look at it and say, this is a sort of Hollywood fantasy? Where does it fall? And it's written by somebody who has a real intimacy with the Hamas leadership as well as with the Israeli side. But it also has some things that, you know, the Israeli government would say, we would never do that,
okay,
right? So what part of it is real? What part of it is fantasy?
I understand, and I agree. It's television. It's serious. It's television, so you have to put some... something to attract the people who are going to watch this. Basically, I will say it, and from the honest point of view of mine, after many years reacting on the ground, that it sticks to the reality. It's not stick to reality when they are falling in love, for example, or when they decided to kidnap the head of the Hamas, if you remember. Yeah. And bring him without any orders. This has never happened. But the other picture, reacting, driving, speaking, the language, by the way, in this series is wonderful. It's very, the dialogue are very good. And the profile of the people is very realistic. The Shabak person, the fat one who is... investigating the woman or try to convince her to be part of collaborate with him, or the head of the unit is something realistic. On the other side, the head of the leader of the terror organization is also a real, it seems to me very real. I must say that most of the this was to me, even I was part of it in the past, was fascinating and attractive and stick to many realities on the ground. not 100%. As I say, they take sometimes the creators took it to the edge, but in general, yes.
So you said your view of it as a former special forces operator and as the head of the civil administration were very different. So I'm first of all, for our listeners, explain what the civil administration is, and secondly, why, when you look at it with your civil administration hat on, does it seem less realistic or seem different?
No, different.
Seem different from when you look at it with your Sayeret Mattal hat on.
The role of the civil administration is totally to provide and help the Palestinian on their daily life, to provide electricity, water, to give them humanitarian aid, to give them the permits to work in Israel, to give them the permits to go abroad. So this is the role of the civil administration. You are a small prime minister in the territory.
So it's the civilian functions of the occupation government.
Totally. So I'm the two coin of the occupation. Of one hand, I'm I am the occupation, because this is what they see every morning when they wake up. They have to come to my office, not personally to my office, but to the civil administration, apply for permits, go to work, come again. If they need something, they will. So I'm the face of the occupation. On the other hand, I'm the angel, because I provide everything. I try to provide everything. So this is the two face of the coin when you are reacting as a civil administration. So because of this, when you look at this series from point of when you are young or in special forces, you are focused in your mission. You don't see the enemy as a humanitarian, but you like to target him, to make the efficient way to target him, to avoid any terror attack, or to protect your citizen in front of the other, as a security person. When you are in the civil administration, you are looking at it in a more calm way. Yes, there is terrorism, but there is also humanitarian problem behind this scene of terror. You can easily understand what they are doing in the other side. Not agreed, but understand. I never agreed to terror, but you can understand why he is not at home, why he is missing his children. The same, the Israeli side, they are the same character. He is with problem in his home, they have problems at home, they miss their children, they miss their children. So when you are in the civil administration, you can look at it in more reluctant and more calm and more modest way, not as a fighter, not as a targeting, not as a to kill the people, but to very easy, more calm way.
And when you look at it in its portrayal of the relationship between Palestinians and the occupation, does that seem realistic as well?
Yes. Yeah, it seems realistic. I don't agree. Yes, I don't agree with the terror. I don't agree with the activities. But it seems realistic. Yes, this is the facts on the ground. There is underground, there is the Hamas, there is the Islamic Jihad who are trying to do it. And yes, if why we related to the occupation, if you watch the television, you can understand what they are doing, why they are doing it, and the reason behind their activities.
On both sides of this show, there are tense relationships between commanders and soldiers, fighters, about how far to go. On the Hamas side, there are people in the organization who have anxiety about the extremity of some of the leaders, one of them in particular. And on the Israeli side, there's a portrayal of a lot of anxiety on the part of commanders about what some of their people are thinking of doing. You've been on both sides of that.
Yeah.
And I'm interested in your reflections on what happens when you have real fanatical commitment on the part of fighters and you're a commander that's holding them back, or conversely, when you have a fanatical commitment on the part of the commander and you have soldiers who are anxious about that?
So what we saw in both sides is that you see a commanders that want very much to achieve the goal, to be successful in the mission, both of them. Unfortunately, watching in this show or series, you can see that they willing or will to sacrifice life of people to achieve their goal. In the Israeli side, we less willing to do it, but still we are doing it. On the Palestinian side, if you watch the series, you see that the commanders there of the Jihadi Islam or the Hamas, it's not mentioned, willing to sacrifice anybody who want to do something against the Israeli. It doesn't matter if he's young, if he's a woman, if he's willing to do something, he like to recruit him. So this relationship between commanders and soldiers is a little bit sensitive in this series, and it show you how people as a commanders or as a want to do the mission and push their soldiers, if you can call the both side soldier, to the edge. And this is something that I saw very clear in all the series, how they can push it to the edge.
In your experience, was it usually commanders who were pushing to the edge, or fighters who were pushing to the edge and commanders who were having to hold them back?
It's happened neither way. Sometimes the soldiers are pushing, but the commanders is holding and stop. And sometimes it's the other way. Commanders want to make it very much, and clever soldiers and adult soldiers say, no, it's enough, it's not realistic. It goes both ways.
The Lawfare Podcast is produced in cooperation with the Brookings Institution. Hey, the podcast is beginning to break through to a much larger audience, so whether you're new to the cast or a longtime listener, please take a moment to rate and review it on whatever podcast distribution system you use. And please share the podcast on all of your social media. Do it now before you forget. We don't have a marketing budget to spread the word. We only have you. Our music is, of course, performed by the Right Honorable Sophia Yan. Thanks for listening.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.